You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 25th of February, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I just want to remind everybody that Albania is an actual member of NATO, despite not having a military of any kind. I think we should start off with that.
That's a very good point that you're making there, Matt, about Albania. Are there any other countries that have ridiculously low militaries that are part of NATO? And what is the relevance of that?
My second favorite is Bulgaria, who still uses, you know, 1970s Soviet weapons. And the only reason that they bring these countries in is to keep them away from Russian influence, especially Bulgaria. You have to have total strategic and equipment compatibility with all other NATO members, despite that not being the case with any of these people, including those who actually have militaries. Albania has, I think they have two or three transport jets for the drug dealers. That's about it in Albania. That's it. So bringing them into the alliance, breaking all their own rules, the point is to keep them away from someone else. So the EU does the same thing, both with Bulgaria and Romania. They break every rule, bring them in, for one reason, to keep them away from Russia. But I don't think I could repeat that enough, that Albania, despite not having a military at all, is a member of NATO. So I don't want to scare anybody, but that's simply how it is.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out there, Matt. And obviously, I mean, NATO break enough rules, international treaties and all sorts of things that NATO break, as well as their own rules. And we're talking about NATO today because Twitter have decided that being anti-NATO is the new hate speech, and they've been removing accounts for being critical of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Heresy against NATO has apparently joined the ever-expanding list of sins that will get one erased from Twitter as big tech mounts a crusade against infidels at home and abroad on behalf of the values of our democracy. Twitter announced bans on 373 accounts it connected to state-linked information operations on Tuesday. Some of them, the company said, amplified narratives that were aligned with the Russian government or focused on undermining faith in the NATO alliance and its stability. So literally just supporting the Russian government will now get you banned from Twitter, or if you undermine the NATO alliance. We've been critical of the NATO alliance for some years now. I think most nationalists are critical of the NATO alliance. And how can they claim that to be an open democratic platform when they're going to remove people for agreeing with the government of another country? I mean, this is absolutely ludicrous. And they haven't actually said that it is hate speech, but that's basically what they're doing, isn't it? They're expanding this term hate speech, which means that you can just censor people, and expanding that to include any criticism whatsoever of American Western New World Order politics. Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, this probably has something to do with why I don't have a Twitter account. I've been accused of this 100 times. I'm not even going to try now. But there's a document that came out in November, which I read a few weeks ago, NATO 2030. About their long-term planning. And in the preface, it says that NATO is going to be partnering with academia, the tech sector, international organizations, NGOs, which of course is just another version of corporate America in building this strategy. So they're already saying in their long-term strategic document that they're going to be working with big tech. And I have the feeling this is one of the first aspects of that.
Well, isn't this a sort of criticism that they make of China as well, that China, the state, is too involved with the private companies and all the rest of it? And you're just telling us here, Matt, that NATO is going to be working with big tech, and also it's working with the mainstream media, as we see in Ukraine. We've seen all these news agencies that have been taken down in censorship. Once again, it's the pot calling the kettle black. Well, we're also hearing about disinformation researchers here. Big tech is also working hand in glove with an entire cottage industry of disinformation researchers, such as Ben Nimmo, an alum of the Atlantic Council, a think tank serving as a NATO cutout, and René DeRista of the Stanford Internet Observatory. DeRista ought to be notorious after her old firm, New Knowledge, was exposed for literally running a bunch of fake accounts posing as Russian bots during a 2017 special US Senate election in Alabama. Because that helped the Democrat, though, New Knowledge was allowed to quietly rebrand, and DeRista fell upwards to land at Stanford. These are not the Russians you are looking for. Move along. That sort of thing. And I have to stop there, because I remember when this happened, and we were told that this was Russian bots that were doing this, but they were supporting the Democrats. And we did a daily traditionalist, I think, at the time with Matt Heinbach. And we pointed out that this had to be a scam. This could not actually be Russian disinformation. It had to be somebody on the left that was doing this. And we pointed this out. We exposed this. Nobody paid any attention to it in the mainstream media. And I think 2 years later, it actually got exposed. And it was exactly as our suspicions were, that it was people that were impersonating Russian bots. So it's interesting that RT are now talking about this today, but we were talking about it back then. We exposed it 2 years before the mainstream media actually did. Getting back to this article here. So it is ironic that DeResta's new outfit has provided more information about Twitter's newest crusade, as well as where it might be headed. Based on information they were provided by Twitter, some of the accounts in one of the Russian networks, the SIO says, appear to have been linked to the operations primarily via technical indicators rather than amplification or conversation between them. So that seems to me to be saying that they're implying that these Twitter accounts were actually bots. They weren't talking to one another, but they were linked to operations via technical indicators. Can you make sense of what they're saying here, Matt?
Well, if they don't have enemies, they're going to create them. That's nothing new here. But it's important to point out that not only am I personally a threat to democracy, but I'm also a professional disinformation researcher. So that's going to be my new title from now on. But what you know, and this is Nebojša Malić, who I've been reading for many years. They use these terms that, you know, phrases like appear to be linked, showing signs, all these very indirect phrases. This isn't evidence. It's vague, and so they fill in the blanks themselves with what they wanted to say. So, and of course, you know, this wasn't really, I mean, it was in the mainstream media years later, but not really, it wasn't dealt with, it wasn't covered. Most people don't know about it. We were saying that at the time, of course, but this is how they report. And someone who's not being careful is reading this thing, and they're acting like there's evidence of this. But this was a buried story. If it wasn't for RT, I don't think most people would even know about it.
What, that Twitter are just banning these accounts? RT does cover a lot of news. And obviously, we do have to say it does come from the Russian viewpoint. But you need to hear the Russian viewpoint as well as the American viewpoint so that you get a balanced viewpoint. This idea of we'll just silence everybody that has a different viewpoint to the New World Order one, it's going to fail, because eventually these other countries are just going to ban Twitter and Facebook, as Russia are actually looking at doing, as we'll hear when we get to the end of this article. Well, nearly 400 Twitter accounts have been shut down in the latest Silicon Valley banning spree over allegations many are linked to Moscow and work to discredit a US-led military grouping that stages war games on the country's border. So, I mean, just that tells you that Russians are not going to be very happy about that. It doesn't have to be linked to Moscow or linked to the Duma. I should imagine there are a lot of Russian citizens that are not happy about rockets being fired into Russia that are going to be critical of that on Twitter. Well, on Tuesday, Russian media reported that the San Francisco-based microblogging platform had confirmed that at least 100 of the bans were of accounts supposedly connected with Russia. I mean, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands, millions of people there are in Russia that actually use Twitter. Are they going to ban all of them? According to a company spokesperson, some of these accounts disseminated messages that were associated with the Russian government, while the rest of the network focused on undermining confidence in the NATO alliance and its stability. One of the accounts targeted belonged to the Valdai Discussion Club, a leading Russian think tank. It hosts an annual event in Sochi, which has attracted dignitaries such as ex-Afghan leader Hamid Karzai, one-time Finnish president Tarja Halonen, erstwhile South African president Thabo Mbeki, former Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi, and China's richest man, Jack Ma. In addition, according to Twitter, 31 accounts were deleted for being allegedly associated with the Internet Research Agency, which some in the West claim is a state-connected hacker factory, and other Russian government structures. The company added that some of these were engaged in criticism of the EU. So I'm guessing that's going to be the next one. If you start criticizing the EU, you're going to get banned from Twitter as well. But I mean, up until now, it has been individuals that they've been banning. But to ban a leading Russian think tank that involves all these presidents and prime ministers of countries around the world, I mean, that's taking it one step further, isn't it? I mean, why hasn't this been on the mainstream news? Why is it just on RT? Have you heard of this Valdai Discussion Club, Matt, or the Internet Research Agency?
Oh, the latter I haven't, but the former I have, and it's pretty tame. But if you've heard of the Gray Zone, it's actually a very good investigative site, actually more or less mainstream. Just very recently, they exposed a UK Foreign and Commonwealth Office project called Counter Disinformation and Media Development, CDMD. And one of the things that they do is they train journalists and send them to Russia. The exact quote is attitudinal changes in the participants and promoting a positive impact on their perception of the UK, meaning they're taking over Russian media organs, sending moles. And this is connected with BBC and Reuters because the Reuters Foundation is helping to finance this. So and now Chris Williamson, who used to be a Labour MP, got into a lot of trouble for when he first tried to expose this. And this has actually been, you know, the Thomas Reuters Foundation has accepted responsibility for this. And secret activities sent into Russia under both private and state media in Britain to overthrow the state and to manipulate media. This came out, and the reason I bring this up, among other things, is that this also got banned from Twitter. The Gray Zone either lost their Twitter account or had things blocked for bringing this up, even though you had Labour MPs talking about it. But this is precisely what they're claiming everyone else does. But of course, it's not really a double standard since they don't have one standard to begin with. This is an empire, and empires and liberalism has far more rights than anybody else.
The BBC Russian correspondent is so obviously some kind of agent that is this just there to try and subvert the Russian state. He has to be one of my most disliked BBC correspondents, the Russian one. Well, let's have a look at Russian's response here. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said that branding users Russian agents of influence was a worrying precedent. Millions of users can fall under this term. Even Navalny and his associates, they certainly influence the US and the EU, given the speed with which anti-Russian sanctions have been rubber-stamped, she said. We will assess the grounds for blocking and give an expert response. In November, a Moscow lawmaker introduced a bill that would see sites like Twitter and Facebook blocked in their entirety for censoring Russian news sources. Twitter labels multiple publicly funded outlets as state-affiliated media, despite not doing so for Western equivalents, such as America's state-run RFERL and Britain's BBC. This is something they've been complaining about for a long time, is that everything RT does has this state-affiliated media thing on it, and nobody says that about the BBC, and the BBC is obviously state-affiliated media. It's British Broadcasting Corporation, and so is Russia. It's Russia Today. Why do they have these double standards? And I would like to see Russia block Facebook and Twitter, because they do have their own internet facilities there. They have their own version of Facebook, VK, which seems to have a lot less censorship on it than Facebook. It does still have censorship. And we see similar things happening in Poland and Hungary. Hungary have set up their own Facebook. Poland, I think, are in the process of doing it. And Poland have also brought a law in so that if Facebook removes somebody's account and they haven't actually broken any Polish laws, then Facebook can get sued for millions of euros. And this is a law that's actually getting passed in Poland. And as I say, in Hungary, they're talking about doing the same thing. So now we've also got Russia here, and they're threatening just to block Facebook and Twitter entirely. I mean, we could really start to see some serious pushback against this censorship, I think, Matt, particularly if Russia actually holds true to what they're saying here. What do you make of it?
Well, you have China in the process of doing the same thing. If you have these countries in Central Europe, Russia, China, a few others, you have something like 2 billion people and these huge emerging markets for these people. It's even conceivable that over time, India would join them. You know, one of the great things about the sanctions has been that they've been forced to build all their own institutions. You know, it's like South Africa in the 70s. It became an advanced economy partially because of these sanctions. They're completely autarkic. And they build their own, like VK, something like this. They have their own credit card agencies. They have everything. So what the hell do they need Twitter and Facebook for? They're not losing anything. And they create, it's like TikTok. There was absolutely no censorship there, which is one of the big problems of it. U.S. government agencies can't spy on people. And so they invented this national security threat idea, which, by the way, came from Mark Zuckerberg, of all people, in a meeting with Trump. So this would be a great thing. But I'm willing to say that they're willing to lose billions of dollars rather than go back on the ideology. I mean, they're billionaires to begin with. They're willing to lose a lot of money. But, you know, not only do they lose nothing, but they gain everything by blocking all of this. And as these things like, you know, TikTok and VK grow, you're going to see some of our people going, well, I don't know a lot of people who have a VK account. This could really be a crushing blow. You know, revolutions tend not to be able to develop unless they have foreign sponsorship, and this is the very beginning of it.
Well, we saw that with the Arab Spring, didn't we? The way that Twitter was used to rile up these Arabs and get them to try and overthrow their countries. I really would like to see Russia expand their credit card processing into the West, because there are a lot of dissidents and just political critics that are being deplatformed by the banks. And we're even seeing people like Donald Trump that are now being deplatformed by the banks. So if Russia was to make its credit card processing available, I think a lot of people would actually move to it. And you bring up the China news agency there. The China news agency was censored by Ofcom in Britain 2 weeks ago, and China responded by banning the BBC from China. So it's not like these organizations can just get away with doing this in these countries. And it is really warming up for war, I think, isn't it? Once you start banning a country's news station and its ability to speak to the rest of the world, it's saying we're about to attack that country. They did the same to Syria. I remember when they removed the official Syria Twitter account so that Syria couldn't explain what was actually going on while the country was being bombed. Well, getting back to this article here, we have some interesting poll results on what Europe's view is of NATO. So how do the European people feel about their role in America's plans for war? The European Council on Foreign Relations recently conducted an in-depth poll of 15,000 people in 10 NATO countries along with Sweden, and published the results in a report titled The Crisis of American Power, How Europeans See Biden's America. Remember, this is the European Council on Foreign Relations. This isn't some Russian outfit, some dissident outfit. This is the European Council on Foreign Relations conducting this poll. The report reveals that a large majority of Europeans want no part in a US war with Russia or China and want to remain neutral. Only 22% would support taking the American side in a war with China, and 23% in a war with Russia. So European public opinion is squarely at odds with NATO's role in America's war plans. But the problem with that is, Matt, everybody was against war in Iraq, and yet they still went to war in Iraq. 1 million people marched against the war in Iraq, and they just ignored that and came up with this silly idea of weapons of mass destruction and went in there. So even though everybody is against war with Russia and China, I don't really see the public having any role in preventing it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I've said that for decades. Foreign policy especially is not something that's amenable to any real public opinion, partially because it never matters, partially because it's purely, you know, in both the private sector and the president's control, and partially because of Johnson's Law. No one really knows much. You could say anything. How, you know, when the weapons of mass destruction thing came out, you know, most of us knew it was nonsense, even back then. But that was even before the internet. It's really hard to prove that. It's really hard to prove when you have every intelligence agency saying that this is the case. And what happens is that they do the damage at the time, years later, even decades later, then admit that it was true. But by then, it doesn't matter. The damage has already been done. But, you know, so these numbers, I mean, they're impressive numbers, but that's against an abstract war with no context. It's very easy for them to create another assassination scenario or even a bomb or to kill a couple of kids on the playground and say it was a Russian agent and have every media source trumpet that idea. You know that they're planning war for a whole lot of reasons. This is one reason. But another is that they approach both of the phony sides of the American political spectrum. The regime approaches the left and says, I mean, they're, you know, the regime and the left are one and the same, but at least this, you know, people on the street, and say that Russia is this nationalist power, you know, doesn't like homosexuals, things like that. They go to the right and they say how terribly anti-American they are and Putin's a communist. They do the exact same thing with China. Or it's the kind of communism that leftists aren't supposed to support, like in North Korea. So when I see them going to both sides with a different agenda for either one, that worries me because they're trying to get this unanimity among the population. But all they have to do is you know, some false flag, something, you know, the press could simply make it up. I mean, how many people are over there that could possibly contradict it, especially someplace that people don't know anything about, like, you know, the Black Sea or something? So we've dealt with this many times before. And in the NATO document I quoted early on, they're claiming that this has, you know, technological, corporate, and economic elements to it. So you have every sector of the elite backing this document. The very fact that they said that we're going to these people means that they're building this coalition, both in terms of equipment and technology, as well as ideology. And that's just as scary as the censorship, because it all means the same thing.
Well, we keep hearing Biden whispering and croaking at us that America is back. But what does Europe think of America at the moment? On transatlantic relations in general, majorities in most European countries see the US political system as broken and their own country's politics as in healthier shape. I'm surprised at that. I mean, a lot of European countries, our politics is in just as bad a shape as America. 59% of Europeans believe that China will be more powerful than the United States within a decade, and most see Germany as a more important partner and international leader than the United States. I think there what they're doing is they're trying to suck up to Germany a little bit, aren't they? Because they want Russia to work with Germany with Nord Stream. So you can see that, you know, this is a pro-Russian news source. But what is wrong with that? We want to hear what the Russian point of view is, the same as we want to hear what the American point of view is, only 17% of Europeans want closer economic ties with the United States, while even fewer, 10% of French and Germans, think their countries need America's help with their national defense. Of course, Germany doesn't get any choice in this because Germany was conquered by the Allies after the war, and Germany is not a free country. It's still under the ruling that was put in place at the end of the war. Biden's election has not changed Europeans' views very much from previous survey in 2019 because they see Trumpism as a symptom of more deeply rooted and long-standing problems in American society. As the writers conclude, a majority of Europeans doubt that Biden can put Humpty Dumpty back together again. But the point is, Trump was getting America back together again. The economy was doing really well up until this coronavirus. I think he had more people employed over there than any other time in America's history. There is also pushback among Europeans to NATO's demand that members should spend 2% of their gross domestic products on defence, an arbitrary goal that only 10 out of the 30 members have met. Ironically, some states will reach the NATO target without raising their military spending because COVID has shrunk their GDPs. But NATO members struggling economically are unlikely to prioritise military spending. I think what they're hinting at there, Matt, is what you were saying at the beginning of the programme about how these members don't even have the military and yet they're part of NATO. Well, 20 out of the 30 members aren't even paying the fees that they're supposed to be paying. So it is quite obviously... Well, quite obviously, there is something else going on there rather than a mutual defense pact. What are your thoughts on this final paragraph here, Matt?
Well, you know, there's a lot more to the story. There's no reason to ever want the U.S. as a partner. It's unstable. It's massively in debt. I mean, Western Europe is too, but you can't be a leader of anything when you're clearly not a superpower. They don't trust American institutions. And I think most people realize that Joe Biden is mostly a media image. You know, they drug him up and put him in front of a microphone and give him a teleprompter. I don't think he knows where he is most of the time. It can only get worse. But we've had whole shows here on relationship between Germany and Russia. And things like, you know, I mean, Turkey has always gone back and forth whether they want to stay in NATO or not. France actually dropped out of NATO a few decades ago, and they never were particularly keen on it. They have their own nuclear arsenal. Most of the European defense budgets have collapsed because they had the U.S. there. Why are they going to spend money? They have these women as defense secretaries with no military experience because it really doesn't matter who they put there. In 2020, China supplanted the U.S. as the EU's number one trading partner just actually a few months ago. Because of that, the EU has now a comprehensive investment agreement with the Chinese. So you have the NATO claim saying we need to divest and close ranks. But then you have, the capitalists from this area with that they may, condemn China on one side of their mouth, but build an investment agreement on the other. At least for some of these guys, money is the concern. You know, it's like Belarus. So many European capitalists, condemn the Belarusian government, but they have all kinds of secret agreements because the economy has always been very healthy, and they didn't have any COVID restrictions. They don't trust the dollar. They don't trust the U.S., and they see the Chinese and the Russians with their gold reserves and everything else as far more stable. This NATO document, all the things we're talking about here, it doesn't exactly bespeak a stable situation. The U.S. is panicking. They can't deal with the fact that they're not a superpower. They haven't been in a long time, maybe just after World War II, and that's about it. The dollar is unstable. The American economy is unstable. No one trusts, certainly after the last few years, no one trusts the political system. Most people realize that Biden is just a cipher at best, and that the future is in the Silk Road. But NATO actually mentions the Silk Road as one of their number one threats. And we did this whole thing with the TikTok trying to steal the algorithm from them. So they'll claim that these are security threats. They'll invent some vague ties with the Chinese government, whatever that means, or they're affiliated, all these vague weasel words, and they'll ban whatever they need to. But when you have an increasingly weak Western world, financially speaking, ideologically speaking, not to mention racially speaking, when their identities are under attack and massive amounts of migrants. You look on the other side, where you have relatively stable ethnic identities, zero debt, and massive gold reserves. You know, where's the money going to go? They could finance Amnesty International all they want, but that doesn't mean they're not going to go where the money is.
Well, they use this excuse of Russia going into Crimea as the reason for all of this and saying, well, Putin broke international law there. But what about NATO's violations of international law? Do you just want to tell us about some of those before we finish, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, just Kosovo alone. And what NATO has anything to do with things like Afghanistan or Iraq? They did have an agreement many years ago with the Yeltsin administration not to expand into Central and Eastern Europe, but they did anyway. We had a whole show about withdrawing from several arms control treaties, especially the intermediate range weapons, let alone Libya and Syria. Again, there, you know, no real purpose behind it except to dominate and control a possible threat to the Israelis. I've been talking since it happened in both 2004 and 2014. Riots in Ukraine, which brought an already, you know, what was a wealthy country, not a fourth world status. And America's military corruption itself, which I've gone on and on about here. Trillions of dollars misspent. The connection between the defense industry and the state really essentially being one and the same thing, not to mention the banks. International law, you know, really doesn't exist. That's nothing to be taken. So to be able to talk about illegal invasions, well, that assumes that international law actually matters. International law is written by, you know, powerful banking families. There's no validity. But even by their own standards, they break their own rules all the time. But empires can do that. And if you're, you know, on the liberal side of the spectrum, you can literally do no wrong. It's just the narcissism of the Western regime.
Well, they tell us all the time about it's our democratic values. That's what we need to bring to these people. But what are their values? Well, it seems to me the values are hypocrisy and projection. That seems to be what NATO is all about. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.